Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevomos Daf Tzadi Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin at the very top of Daf Tzadi Tes. Before we begin the shiur, we glance at the side where we see a Nosei Mivneh heading. The Nosei is the topic heading and the Mivneh the structural note. The triangles that appear in this source represent Gimel Mikrim, three cases, Shel Chalitza, Misofek, issues of the chalitza ceremony done under doubtful circumstances, lenoshim ho'asuros lo. As a result of a doubt in each case that will be described, we end up having a situation where a person will be doing chalitza with a woman that is actually forbidden to him. You'll see li'imo, he'll be a son will be doing chalitza with his mother. La'achoso, he'll be doing chalitza with his sister. Lebito, with his daughter. Now the Tanaic source with the cases. The source begins, Tanu Rabbanan, we've been at the top. Yesh choletz li'imo misofek. There is a situation that will be described as someone doing chalitza with his mother as a result of a doubt. La'achoso misofek, with his sister as a result of a doubt. Lebito misofek, and with his daughter as a result of a doubt. In order to navigate through the Gemara, we will attempt to take advantage of diagrams that will accompany this section. So now we start with the imo misofek. Ketzad, regarding imo misofek, how does that come to be? Imo v'isha acheres. So we feature two women, v'lohen shnei zechorim, and they have two male sons. V'chozru v'yoldu shnei zechorim b'machbei. And then on a subsequent occasion, these two women had two more sons in a cave. Machbeh is in hidden, a cave, but it represents a situation where confusion will arise. It's dark, the babies get switched around. Ubo b'no shel zu, v'nosa imoi shel ze, uv'no shel zu, nosa imoi shel ze. And the A son of one of the ladies came and married the other lady, and the son of the other lady came and married this lady. Now, in order to appreciate that a little bit more, we have a diagram on the side, and the diagram is taken from Rashi. The names that we've put in are found in Rashi as well. So you have one couple. The title of the diagram, you can say, is Le'imo Misafek. One couple is Rochel and Yaakov, and there's another couple, Chano and Reuven. Rochel and Yaakov have a child, Yosef. That is a known son. And Chano and Reuven have a son, Chetzron, who is a known son. Notice that they are certain. Then each couple, as mentioned before, has a Zohar, a boy, the Machbo, in the cave. And they get switched around. In other words, we possibly switched around. Now, stage one, in our Yevomos charts, you'll see slash marks through names, which indicates death, and you'll also see a numbering sequence. The numbers indicate order of events, so that on a rather static chart, you can actually appreciate a progression of events. So in this story, the first stage, you see Yaakov and Reuven, they die. Now, of course, these are people that have children, so there's no question of Yibum at this point. Upon their death, notice there's a number two, which indicates there are two lines which indicate marriage. First, you see between Rachel and Chetzroin, and a marriage between Yosef and Chana. That's the second stage. Now, with these marriages, the Chetzron and Yosef, they will die, leaving no children. At that point, then, so you have men that died, leaving no children. Their brothers have to do Yibum. Now, their brothers are those Zohar B'machbeis that you can see indicated on the chart. So these Zohar B'machbeis are going to have to... Now, they don't know... they don't know which one is the widow of their brother. In other words, there are two women, but they don't know, is this my brother's wife or is this some stranger's wife? Now, if it's some stranger's wife, you can't go and marry her because she is bound to the brother of her husband. So that's called Yevama Lashuk. So to suggest that either one of these fellows, the Zohar B'machbeis, can do Yibum, that is out of the question. So if we go back to the Gemara text, Umesu Belo Bonim. Now that line of the Gemara is referring to the stage where Chetzron and Yosef, they died without children. In order to release the widows, Chana and Rochel, so that they can marry someone else, each Zohar B'machbe will do Chalitza with both women, Rochel and Chana, so that each Zohar B'machbe is certainly doing Chalitza with his brother's wife. Now, in the process of the Zohar B'machbe doing Chalitza with both of them, so each one, you can see on the chart, it ends up doing Chalitza with his mother. Nimtza kol echad v'echad choletz li'imo misafik. As a result of the doubt, you see a son is doing Chalitza with his mother. The next case, la'achoysoi misafik ketzad. How are we to understand that case where a brother is going to be doing Chalitza with his sister as a result of some doubt? Imo v'isha cheres, shiyoldu shtei nekevos b'machbon. We have also, for this, we will try to make use of the chart diagram on the side. So you have a case of a woman and two women that gave birth to women, to girls in a cave. Uba'u achehem. Sheloi me'oisa ha'em v'nosum, and their brothers that were from a different mother, and Mirtz Hashem will have a chance to look at this on the chart. Their brothers from a that is the brothers. We used a pronoun, their brothers. When we eventually look at this case on the chart, we'll be able to focus in on who that pronoun was a reference to. But in the meantime, we see in the Gemara that their brothers came, brothers from a different mother came, the Nosum, and married those girls, those daughters that were born in the cave that got mixed up. Umesu blobonim, and these brothers died without children. So the surviving brothers, choletz lishtehen, the surviving brothers are going to have to do chalitza with each one of the girls, being that each one of the girls is their brother's wife. The only problem is we don't know which girl is the wife of which of the actual brother. So nimsa choletz la'achoso misafek. The result of this is chalitza done with one sister out of doubt. Now, as we said, that we have a chart. Let's take a look at our diagram and see if this will improve our appreciation of this case. So we have under the heading Achosa Misafek, you can see there are two, we'll say two families. There is a mother, an Aim, and an Av, and that Av marries another woman, the Aim, and on some other occasion that woman had been married to another man, Av. And that same setup you see on the other side. Now, in this case, the story started off with two women that gave birth to two girls in a cave, under hidden circumstances where they got mixed up. So on the chart, you can see we have Bas encircled. You see Bas Aleph and Bas Beis, the Machbo. They were born in a cave. In this family unit, the Bas, each daughter there has a brother through a common mother. That you can see just by looking at the chart. The squiggle underlined Ben is a brother to the Bas, each one of the Bases. Now that's important to note, that each Bas has a brother. It's a brother from a common mother. In this family setup, those the bends that we squiggle underline, they were the reference we made in the source to their brothers. In other words, these fellows have brothers. They're the ben that you see in the diamonds. And it said their bends, they are their brothers from a different mother. So that the squiggle underline bends have brothers, the fellows in the diamonds, but they're brothers through a common father, not through a common mother. The fact, though, that they are brothers through a common father is very important for the halachas of Yibum. So now that's the setup of the family. And what actually happened? The diamond bends, you can see in each case, the diamond bends are not related to those girls. I hope that's clear. The Ben has his own set of parents, and each girl has her own set of parents. So there's no problem in the diamond Ben marrying the encircled Bas. So that takes place. They marry, and you can see that on the next part of the chart. And then those Bens die, no children. Now, if that be the case, so their brothers through the common father, the Ben that you see that we had squiggle underline, those are the brothers of the Ben that you see in a diamond through a common father. It's their obligation to do the mitzvahs of Yibum Chalitza. The only thing is no one Ben can do Yibum, can marry either one. Why? Because the second that one marries, he might be marrying the wife of the other fellow. Not his brother's wife, but the other guy's wife. That's the point that is unclear because of the mix-up of the women. So that the surviving brothers will have to do chalitza, each one of the surviving brothers, with both women. And that's what those lines indicate with the arrows on them. Ben, the first Ben, does chalitza with Bas Aleph and with Bas Beis, and the second Ben will do chalitza with Bas Aleph and Bas Beis. But in the course of this, you can see that a chalitza is done with one's sister. Just to go over the suffix from a different vantage point, each one of the Bens that are doing chalitza, he knows that one of these two women is his sister. He just doesn't know which one. If it was his actual sister, so he wouldn't be doing chalitza because she's not a candidate for Yibum. A brother doesn't marry a sister in order to accomplish Yibum. But since there's this element of doubt, each surviving Ben, their brother, each surviving brother doesn't know, is this woman his sister, or is it an unrelated woman that happened to marry his brother? So as a result of that, we insist on chalitza, and as we said, you have a brother doing chalitza with his sister. Let's go on in the Gemara text. Levito misofek ketzad. How do we have a situation where a father ends up doing chalitza with his daughter because of a doubt? So we continue in the text. Ishto v'isho acheres shioldu shtei nekevos b'machboi. You have a situation where a man and another woman gave birth to girls in hiding in a cave. Ubo achehem v'nosum, and the brothers came and married these girls. Umesu b'lobonim, and then the brothers died without children. Zecholetz lebito misafek, vezecholetz lebito misafek, and the result of that, with the brothers dying. Now those brothers had married the daughters respectively, the daughters of their brother. An uncle can marry a niece. The only problem is that when looking at each girl, we cannot establish a definitive connection between the girl and the surviving brother. In one of the cases, the surviving brother is actually a father of one of those girls. Now, again, that might sound a bit confusing, quite understandably. Let us take a look at the diagram that we have. And again, this diagram is taken from the Rashi, and the names that appear are found in the Rashi. So under the chart headed Lebito Misafek, you can see there's Reuven, who's married to a woman, Isha, and Reuven has two brothers, and they appear in diamonds. The Reuven and this woman father a girl, and she gives birth to her in a cave. That's Bas B'machbo, call her Aleph. There's another couple, Kolev and his wife. They bear a child, Bas, in a cave, Beis. The brothers of Reuven, each one marries one of these girls. Now, each brother of Reuven doesn't know, is he marrying his niece, which is okay, or is he marrying a stranger? But that's what happened. Then these brothers die, leaving no children. The brothers of whom? They were the brothers of Reuven. The brothers that died, leaving no children. Reuven is their brother, and he has to take care of the mitzvahs of Yibum. Now, can he do Yibum? No way, because one of those women happens to be his daughter. He doesn't know which one is which. The other girl has to be freed. She's currently bound to Reuven. She's the daughter of strangers. So Reuven is a surviving brother to the deceased husband of that girl who was born to strangers. Reuven has to see to it that she gets released. So he's got to do chalitza, but as we said, he doesn't. If he knew which was who was whom, so with his daughter he wouldn't do anything, and the other girl he can actually marry, but he doesn't know who is whom. So Yibum is out of the question. So what is Reuven going to have to do? Reuven is going to have to do chalitza with both of them. So using the names, Reuven has an obligation to release the daughter of Kalev and his wife, who married one of Reuven's brothers. And through this, as we explained already, through this you end up having Reuven doing chalitza with his daughter. We turn back to the Gemara, and also on the side we have a topic heading, which reads Pa'omim she'ish ve'isha molidin chomesh umos. We're going to see that at times you can end up having a a man and a woman bearing, birthing, or you're going to see it's more a case of producing five different nation forms. When we say nations, you understand we're not talking about seats in the UN, but rather different categories of people, as we will see. Tanya, Hori Rabbi Meir Oimer, Ish V'Isha, a man and a woman, Pomim Shemolidin Chomesh Umos. They can at times be responsible for creating five nations. Ketzad. How can you account for that? Yisrael Shalokach Eved V'Shivcha Minashuk. Falohen Shnei Bonim. A Jew bought two slaves, a woman, a man and a woman. They're slaves. He bought them from the public, from the market. And these two slaves happen to have two children, two sons. These sons were born before, of course, before this Jew bought the Eved and Shivcha. V'nizkayir echad mehem. One of those sons converted. Nimsa echad ger v'echad oyved kechavim. Well, at this point then, you have that son is the son that converted is a ger, and the other one is a Gentile. He didn't convert. Hitbilon l'shem avdus. The owner then was matbiol, had immersed in the mikveh, the Eved and Shivcha that he bought them from Gentiles, and now he immersed them in order to impose upon them the status of Jew of Eved in halacha terms. We mentioned the term slave before, and the term Eved appeared before, but when he was an Eved, a slave owned by a Gentile, he has no connection to Torah and mitzvahs. However, a slave that's been immersed in order to impose Torah slave status, that imposes on the Eved laws very similar to the laws that a woman is obligated in. So he took this Eved and Shifcha that he bought and was toivel them, immersed them. It's a form of conversion, but it's a conversion in order to reach Eved status. V'nizkiku ze lo ze. And they had relations and with one another. So Harekan, now you have we take a tally of what we have. You have a ger, v'vikovim, that couple that he bought, that's the couple we dashed, underlined in the source. So the couple that he bought had produced we have a convert, we have an idol worshiper, the Eved, and the children that they bore after they were immersed for Avdus. That's the... that those are the children after their Tevila. So now, how many nations does that account for? Three. Shichwer es hashivcha. Ubo oleha ha'eved. The owner then set free the shivcha. That makes her into a full-fledged Yisraelis, a Jewess. And the Eved, who he didn't send free, is still a slave. So and he had intimacy with the Shivcha, now she's a Jewess. That union creates a child that we call a Mamzer. Harekan, now the tally is Ger, V'Oved Kechavim, V'Eved, U'Mamzer. That's the Mamzer is the child that this Shivcha produced after she was Mishuchreres. So now you have this same couple producing four different kinds of people. Shichrer Shneim, V'Sion Zelazeh, the owner now sent free the Eved as well, and had them marry. So now you have two Jewish people marrying. Harei Kan, the new result, the new child, is going to be a regular Jew. He's born from a couple that had been made into Jews, so the offspring is a Jew. Harekan ger v'oivik kechavim v'eved umamzer v'Yisrael. So that's the final tally, and all of these come from that original Eved v'Shivcha couple that we had dashed underline on the third line of the source. The Gemara asks, "My komash malon? What is the purpose of this source?" In other words, the information in the source is fairly obvious, even without a formal Tanaic source. Just with your general knowledge of halacha, you could have come to this conclusion on your own. What is revealed in this source that I might not have known? So the Gemara answers, "Oyvei kichav ve'eved habo al bas Yisrael havlad mamzer." That is the point that this source reveals, and we also had dashed underline this. We didn't explain earlier why we did that, but now you can see at the point in the source where you see hashivcha. We wanted simply to focus your attention on the shivcha, that really she's a Jewess at that point because she's been freed, and an eved has intimacy with her. The result was mamzer, that you see is dashed underlined at the end of the next line in the text of the source. So the source is telling us that point, that a Jewish girl that has intimacy with either a Gentile or a slave, the resultant child is a mamzer. We've encountered this point of view numerous times earlier in the Masechta, and we've mentioned in the past that this is a point that when it comes to practical halacha, you'll see other opinions other than that which we learned over here. But in Gemara markings, we always mention that, make the disclaimer that we do not deal in our shiurim with applied halacha. We're learning the Gemara, which is the basis, the root of the halachas, but it's not the applied halacha. We continue by glancing at the side under the Nosei, the topic heading, and it reads as follows: Yesh moicher aviv lahadvois imoi ksubasa. A very strange sounding situation, but it will become realistic as we look into the Gemara. But we're describing a person that sells his father in order to get cash, in order to pay the ksuba that's due to his mother. So you have a son selling his father, getting cash, and using the cash to pay off the ksuba due to his mother. Well, how could that be? Tanu Rabbanan. Yesh moicher aviv lahagvos imoi ksubasa. There could be a situation of a man selling his father in order to have his mother's ksuba paid. The ksuba, I hope everyone remembers from previous sukkis, the ksuba represents the financial guarantees that a woman receives upon getting married. There are more details to ksuba. There's an entire masichta about that. But for our purposes, we're dealing with the basic value or cash that's due to a woman in the event that she either becomes a widow or is divorced. So in order to pay off the ksuba, we're going to describe a case where a son is selling his father. Ketzad, here it is. Yisrael lokach eved v'shivcha min ashuk v'lohem ben. A Jew bought two slaves, a male and a female, from the market. They had a son. Now the son, this Jew, did not buy. V'shichrer es ashivcha v'nosa. The owner freed the shivcha, and after freeing the bondmaid, she becomes a Jewess, and the owner, the Yisrael, married her. So you have a man marrying a woman, v'omad v'kosav kol nechosav livna, and the husband assigned all of his properties. Set up all his properties as a source of collection for her ksuba. Now, all of the properties are set up as a source of collection for her ksuba, and they were transferred. That's kosav kol nechosav livna. He then wrote all of his property to her son. So he assigned his property to her son. Now, we emphasized a moment ago that his property also is duty bound, is actually a lien in order to pay off. There's a lien upon his property to pay off her ksuba.
But now what did he do with his property? He assigned all his property to her son. The son, of course, is that fellow that the Yisrael never bought. We can say he's a Gentile. Now, when the Yisrael, either he dies or he divorces the woman has a right to collect her ksuba. Now, what's she going to do? She's going to turn to her son, who is the owner of all the property that, in effect, was upon which there was a lien for her ksuba. So she turns to her son. What is the son going to do? He doesn't have cash to pay off the ksuba, so he's going to start selling off the property that his mother's husband had assigned to him. Included in his property happens to be the slave, i.e., his father. Nimsozeh moicher es oviv. It turns out then you have a son selling his father, who was that slave. His slave is part of the property. In order for his mother to receive the ksuba payment that's due to her. Again, you have a similar question we raised before. We have a source here that doesn't seem to reveal anything surprising. What's the chiddush over here? My komashmalon, what is it telling me? Two answers. Number one, kulo Rebbe Meir hi. The previous framed section, you can see, had opened with Rebbe Meir. So, what we're informed here is that this frame section is which happens to be a continuation of the source that had begun with Rebbe Meir, that this is also in accordance with Rebbe Meir. Now, what's Shitas Rebbe Meir regarding financial matters? The Avda Metatali, Umetatali Mishtabdi Luksuba. Shitas Rebbe Meir, unlike the opinion of others, is that portables, and an Eved is an example of a portable, that portables are bound, there is a lien upon them, a man's portable holdings, in order to pay off his ksuba debts. So that opinion that metabdalin are meshubad, are bound, are a lien upon, meshubad means there is a lien upon them to pay off the ksuba, this idea that metabdalin are subject to the lien for paying off a ksuba is something that Rebbe Meir would hold. Now, other opinions say that when people enter debt and money is due to be paid to others, those others that are expecting payment, what is their mind assuming? Upon what is their mind relying? So in general, the other opinion says that only karka, only land, real estate is bound in paying off debts, because real estate is something that is always there. It doesn't move and nothing can really ever happen to it to eliminate it, as opposed to something that's portable. It gets lost, or it's burnt, it's destroyed, and hence people in general don't think about portables as being their source of collection. But Rebbe Meir, he says that portables are on people's mind as a source of collection, and hence even the slave, the father in this case, was bound in order to pay off the ksuba. So that the chiddush of this framed source is that what we're telling you here is that this is also in accordance with Rebbe Meir. It ends up, it's the seifa of Rebbe Meir from the source before, and it's in accordance with Shitas Rebbe Meir that holds that metatalin portables are bound, a lien is upon them for ksuba payments. The Iboyasema, another approach is that it's not in accordance with Rebbe Meir per se, but rather avda kemekarko domi, that avodim, even though physically speaking they're portables, in halachic terms they are viewed as land. And there is a basis for that in the scriptures, which we won't get into right now. But if you say that avodim, even though they might physically be portable, but nevertheless they're viewed halachically as land, you can understand why there is a lien upon them. And hence you have the son selling off his father, who is a slave, just like he would be able to sell off land in order to pay the ksuba upon which the woman had a lien on these properties. Before we continue, we glance at the side. We have a nosei. The topic heading reads, Isha shnisare vlodo bevlad kalosa. A woman whose child got mixed up with the child of her daughter-in-law. In other words, a woman and her daughter-in-law were both bearing children at the same time in the same hidden place. And they got mixed up. How should we proceed with regard to matters of Yibum and Chalitza? So let's take a look at the Mishnah, and we might take advantage of a diagram in order to help us along as well. The Mishnah says, Ho'isha shinis arev vloda bevlad kalosa. As we said, a woman and her daughter-in-law, her son's wife, but the birthing is a woman's issue. So you have these two women that are bearing children that got mixed up. Higdilu hatarovos v'nosu noshim. So these two children grew up, matured, became adult, and they married women. Umesu, and they died, leaving no children. The use of the diamonds here is to describe the two situations when it comes to, we'll say, the death, who is dying. So, Mesu Bnei Hakala. So, retract that. Mesu. The men that had married these, was a mixed up. The men that had been mixed up that married these women, now these men died. Bnei Hakala, other children of that daughter-in-law, you have a situation where her son had her son, the Kala's son, that again she's not sure which one is actually her son, but we know that her son had married a woman, and her son died, leaving no children. So the other son, i.e. his brother, has to do something as far as chalitza, but he doesn't know which one was married to his brother, because the brothers had been mixed up. So the Bnei Hakala Cholzin Velo Miavmin, the son of the Kala will have only Chalitza as an option. He cannot do Yibum. Why not? Shehu Sofek Eishes Achiv. He happens to be the doubt here is that each girl is either the wife of his brother. That would be okay if it was the wife of his brother. Sofek Eishes Achi Oviv. Here is where the problem is. The girl that he's looking at might have been married not to his own brother, but to his father's brother. A woman married to one's father's brother, Eishes Achi Oviv, she's actually in the Torah referred to by the term Doda, and she's strictly forbidden. So, looking at things from the other children of the Kala, the only option is Chalitza. Yibum cannot be done. Bnei Hazikena, the other children of the mother, they, O Cholzin, O Miavnin. They have both options open to them. Shesofek eishes achiv, the eishes ben achiv. The woman might be the widow of his brother, which would be the mitzvah of Yibum, or she might be the widow of the son of his brother. We'll now take a look at the diagram that we have. You have a Isha, and she has one Ben who's also married to an Isha. That's the Kala. And that Isha, the original mother, has another child that's encircled, like you see the Kala also having a child that's encircled. These are children that were born in the cave and got mixed up. Both women in this story, the mother-in-law and the daughter-in-law, you notice, have another child that we have in a diamond. So now, what happens? The mixed up children, the children that are now are in circles, they married women, they died, leaving no children. The Ben, who's in a diamond with the bottom that's shaded in, that child, that fellow, cannot do Yibum. Why not? Well, he doesn't know the woman that he would be doing Yibum with, is that the wife of his brother? That would be great, but he doesn't know that. It might be the wife of whom? It might be the wife of his father's brother. Notice the Ben, that diamond Ben in our diagram, his father had a brother. One of his brothers was the fellow that was in the mix-up. So that the woman might be not his own brother's wife, but his father's brother's wife. So that particular Ben cannot do Yibum. On the other hand, the Ben that's featured with the diamond with the tip shaded on top, let's analyze that. When confronting any given woman, the woman might be his brother's wife, but he's not sure if it's his brother's wife, because his brother was part of a mix-up. But it might be the wife of whom? It might be the wife of his brother's son. You notice that the fellow with the diamond in the tip, the upper tip shaded in, so he has a brother. His brother was married to the Kala. That means that they had that Ben and the Isha, the Kala, they had a son. How do we describe the son right now? He is the son of his brother. And we're dealing with the wife, so it's the wife of his brother's son. That's a relationship that is mutter. It's allowed for a man to marry the wife of his nephew. So let's go back to the Mishnah. Up till now, we had the mix-ups getting the mix-ups dying. That's what we featured on our chart. The mix-ups had died. And in our case, the next diamond in the Mishnah, Mesu Haksherim. Here we have to imagine a situation where in our original chart, you had fellows in a diamond. These were the Mishnah calls them Ksherim. This is a question the Mishnah will deal with later. But for our purposes, these are known. These are children who know who their parents are. There is no mix-up involved here. But they died. In this new scenario, they died, leaving no children. they have brothers. However, the issue here is the brothers that survive, and if we were to refer back to our original chart, those are the fellows that are encircled, and in this case they're the ones that remain alive. They have to do something. They have to do something to release the wives of the fellows who knew, who never got mixed up. So Hataruvos, what are they going to do? Livnei Hazikena Cholzin Velo Miabmin. So that when it comes to these two fellows that are part of the mix-up, there is no option in marrying the widow of the son of the original mother. That's not an option. Why? Because as far as these mix-ups are concerned, Shu Safek Eishes Achiv, it might be the widow of his brother. However, it's also the Eishes Achi Aviv. It might be the widow of the brother of your father. And that woman, as we said before, is strictly forbidden. Livnei Hakala. Now, the mix-ups that remained with regard to the married child of the Kala, so Echot Choletz, the Echot Miabim, one of the two mix-ups will do Chalitza. Now, by doing Chalitza, from his standpoint, she might be, in fact, his own Yavoma, and he's freeing her. It might be that she's not. But that's okay. With that having been done, the Echod Miabim, the other fellow, our apologies for that interruption. It certainly doesn't hurt to make sure everyone is still awake. But with regard to the B'nai Hazikena, after one of them, one of the mix-ups, does chalitza. So, as we said, he's either doing chalitza with his actual yavama, thereby freeing her, and if not, so the other mix-up will be able to marry her because she is his actual yavama. And from his standpoint, and if she was the other one's yavama, but she already received chalitza. We continue with a new situation. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. Kohenes shenis'arev v'loda b'vlad shibchosa. A woman who's married to a Kohen, and she has a child. The child is a Kohen, and this woman bore her child at the same time that her bondmaid bore a child. The bondmaid's child is a slave. So you have two children who will grow up not knowing their true identity. I'm either a Kohen or a slave. Ech yesh lehem linoig binyonim akshum lukuna. How should they conduct themselves with matters that are relevant to the priesthood, to kahuna? Kohenes, we continue back in the text, second line from the bottom. Kohenes shenisarev vlodo bevlad shibchosa. A woman married to a Kohen who bore a child, the child will be a Kohen, and the birth took place at the same time that her slave or bondmaid was bearing a child, and they got mixed up. Hare elu oichlin betruma. The two offspring, the two children, are entitled to truma. The Kohen one obviously is entitled to truma. Truma is the tithe that a person separates from his crops and gives to Kohanim, and only Kohanim are allowed to eat it. However, when we say only Kohanim are allowed to eat it, that happens to include Kohanim and their possessions. A Kohen's slave, for example, is entitled to eat Truma as well. So either way, Truma is okay. The Cholkin Chelek Echad Begorin. The Gorin is the granary. That's the site at which Truma was distributed. What does that mean? They receive one portion of the granary. The Gemara will deal with that later. We continue on the top of Amud Beis. The Einon Mitamin Lemesin. If a Kohen, as everyone knows, is prohibited in exposing himself to defilement to the dead, that's called Tumas Mesin. Neither one is allowed to expose themselves to Tumas Mes, because each one might be a Kohen. The slave of a Kohen, if he knew who he was, a slave is allowed to become Tomei to Mason, but in our case, neither one knows his true identity. The Einon Noisin Noshim, Bein Ksheiros Bein Psulos, they cannot marry as things stand right now, because a fellow is going to marry a woman that's kosher, a regular Jewess, but he might be a slave, and a slave's not allowed to marry a Jewess. The fellow that he might be a Kohen. Well, if he's a Kohen, he's not allowed to marry a Shivcha. He can't marry a Mamzer, a Shivcha. He has restrictions upon whom he can marry. So neither one can get married. Higdilu hataruvos, when they grow, they become adult. Vishikru ze ezeh, and then they freed one another. One is in effect the owner, and the other one is the slave, but neither one knows who is whom. So each one frees the other. Now, with that having been done, you have two Jewish people. One is a real Kohen, and the other one would be considered, we'll say, a convert or a slave that was freed, having, we'll say, a convert status. As a result, there is a marriage possibility, however, there are limitations. Noisim noshim ru'uyos lekuhuna. They can marry women, provided they are women that would be able to marry a Kohen. Once again, each one might be an actual Kohen, so neither one of these fellows can marry, let us say, a divorcee. A divorcee is someone who is disqualified from marrying into the priesthood, into the kohuna. V'einon mitamin lemesin. They, as we saw before, they're not allowed to expose themselves to defilement of the dead. V'im nitmu'u, and if they did, einon soifkin harbon. If they did so deliberately, they, on the other hand, would not be subject to lashing, which would be the punishment for a known Kohen who deliberately defiled himself to the dead. But you can't lash someone if you are doing so with an element of doubt. You have to know for sure that he violated the halacha. Not only that, he has to receive a warning, and the warning must be stated in definite terms, not in doubtful terms, so that the punishment of lashing cannot be applied as a result of even, let's say, deliberate defilement to the dead on their part. V'einon oichlin betruma. Being that they were freed, in other words, that the one that was a slave is freed, he's no longer the possession of the Kohen. So the fellow who was in fact freed is not allowed to eat truma. That is, as a result, neither one can eat truma, because neither one knows if he is the one that was freed. As a freed person, he's not, as we said, he's not the possession of the Kohen. He's considered a Yisrael, and Yisrael is not allowed to eat truma. V'imachlu, if they ate truma, Einon Mishalman Karen V'Chomesh, they do not pay what ordinarily a Yisrael who ate Truma would have to pay. If a non-Kohen ate Truma, a known non-Kohen, he has to pay the principal and add a fifth. Not so over here, because each one is claiming, I'm a Kohen. V'Einon Chokim Ala Goren, they don't receive a portion of truma at the granary. We don't give them truma. Why? Because each one might in fact be a Yisrael, not entitled to receive truma. Again, when we say Yisrael, we're talking about the fellow that was the slave that had been freed. Umochrin es hatruma, if they have their own property, and as a result, they, not knowing if he's really a Kohen or not, so they will tithe, they set aside the truma, but as opposed to regular situations where a person has truma, a truma tithe separate from his produce, he has to give it to a kohen. Not so over here. True, they can't eat it, as we said, but they don't give it away. They can sell it. They sell it to a known kohen. Vadomim shalem, the money they get, they keep. The Einon Cholkin Bekotche Hamikdash. They don't get portions of sacrifices offered in the Beis Hamikdash. Only a true Kohen gets a portion, not a doubtful Kohen. The Ein Noislem Kochim, and we don't give to them sacrifices to offer in the Beis Hamikdash. Only a known Kohen can serve in the Beis Hamikdash, not someone that's doubtful. The Ein Motzian Shelohem Midehem. And if a Kohen, let us say, had a sacrificial obligation, we do not force them to present it to the current service group in the Beis HaMikdash. Rashi gives a great deal of background to this particular era of halacha, but we'll try just very briefly to say that people who have a sacrificial obligation, when they separate, when they dedicate their sacrifice, they have to bring it to the current service group in the Beis HaMikdash. A person from the rank and file population don't have much leeway. It's given to that service group that's serving that week in the Beis HaMikdash. A Kohen is entitled by the Torah, an actual Kohen is not obligated to give it to the current service group. He can offer it on his own. He can choose to whom to have it offered. So therefore, each one claims that he's a real Kohen. So we can't take away from them or extricate from them their sacrifices in order for it to be offered by this current week's service group. Rather, as we said, they have leeway in determining who shall do the actual offering. When one slaughters mundane meat, one's own meat for personal consumption, we'll talk about non-sacrificial meat, it's called chulin. Even from chulin animals, there is a part of the animal, several parts that are destined to the Kohanim. One has to tithe, one has to give them, separate them and give them to the Kohanim, once again as is legislated by the Torah. That's what the Mishnah refers to now. Ufturin min hazroah min lachayim min hakeva. The zroah, the arm, the lachayim, the cheek, the keva, the stomach of animals, is the portions of all slaughtered animals given to Kohanim outside of the Beis HaMikdash. These fellows, when they slaughter an animal, each one claims he is a Kohen. So he doesn't have to give this. This is in the realm, by the way, of momentous, of monetary matters, not kochim, not holy matters. So they are entitled to keep it. If you want to take it away from me, claiming that I'm not the kohen, so you have to bring proof. We see hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. If you want to extract from someone money or property, you have to bring proof that you have a right to take it. B'chor is a firstborn male animal. In general, a non-Kohen who has a firstborn kosher variety male animal gives it to the Kohen. The Kohen brings it to the Beis HaMikdash and offers it as a sacrifice, and it belongs to the Kohen. Here we're dealing with people that are Safek Kohanim. So if they have a B'chor born in their herd, they keep it. However, they can't offer it as a sacrifice because they themselves are not, or possibly not Kohanim. So they have it graze until until it develops a blemish. And as such, it can then be slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash and eaten as personal meat. The noisim of Chomrei Kohanim v'Chomrei Yisrael, and we apply to them the stringencies that are relevant to Kohanim and relevant to Yisraelim. This is a phrase that will be discussed later in the Gemara. Meisu Haksherim. Now, this is a term that we saw in the Mishnah. And in terms of our markings, you can see that was the second diamond at the lower part of, you can see at the lower part of Omid Aleph. And the Gemara asks, the term Ksherim is often used in contrast to Psulim. Psulim means people that are disqualified. So in the story featured in the Mishnah, again, if you need, you can certainly refer back to the diagram that we had. So in that story, so you had children that were mixed up, and you had children that were known to their parents. So at this section of the Mishnah, it spoke about the known children that had been married, died, leaving no children. They were called the Ksherim. So what does that leave you to say about the other ones, the mix-up ones? Well, if these are called Ksherim, then the mix-up ones would be called Psulim. So the Gemara asks about that. Elo Hanoch Mishum Di Aruv Luhu Havlu Psulim. The others, just because they got mixed up, are they considered disqualified? They're considered unfit individuals? That's not true. Omar of Papa Emo Umesu Havadoyim. Since the ones that got mixed up can't be termed as disqualified or unfit, it's not accurate to then describe the known sons as Ksherim. Rather, describe them as Vadoyim, the certain ones. And so in the second part of the Mishnah, the second diamond, there it featured a case where the certain sons had died, the sons who knew who their parents were, they died leaving no children. And then the Mishnah went on to describe what is the role of the surviving brothers who were in fact part of the mix-up. Livnei Hakalo Echod Choletz the Echod Miyabe. And we saw this in the Mishnah as well, that with regard to the children of the Kala, of the daughter-in-law, the son of the daughter-in-law, the known son of the daughter-in-law that died leaving no children, with regard to the mix-ups, so one will do Chalitza and the other will do Yibum. And here, as we've seen in the past, the order is very significant. Davko michlitz v'hoda yivumi. It has to be first in that order that chalitz is done, and then yibum. Avo yivumi b'rei sholo. But for one of the mix-ups to do yibum before any chalitz is done, that cannot be. Why not? De kapoga b'yivom l'shuk, because there is a possibility that he will be marrying not the wife of his brother, but the wife of the other one. In other words, we're dealing with the B'nai Kala, so you'll have in the case of the mix-up, you might have marriage, Yibum, taking place with someone that is not really the wife of your brother. So that we want to make sure that if you are marrying the woman that's not the wife of your brother, that she actually had received chalitza from the other one, freeing her. We continue in the Gemara. Kohenes Shinis Arev, and it went on to describe a case of a Kohen that got mixed up with a slave, and it said Cholkin Chelek Echad Begorin. So the Gemara says Chelek Echad Pshita. They get one portion. That's obvious. One is a Kohen and the other is the slave of the Kohen. The slave of the Kohen simply eats Shuma, not on his own merit, but he receives the food from his master. So there's only one portion to be given out over here. Why does the Mishnah have to tell us that? Ema Chelek Ke'echad. And here we look at Rashi. We're looking at Rashi under the Gemara text, the fourth line in Rashi. Chelek ke'echad. Im bo'u shnehem al ha'goren. Nosnin lohem. Avolzeh belozeh ein chokim lohem. If they come together, so they can get a portion of Truma. But if they come by themselves, they cannot get a portion. The Kosovar Ein Cholkin, Rashi goes on to say, because Ein Cholkin Truma le'Eved Elim Kain Raboy Imoy. We don't give Truma to the Eved of a Kohen. Even though the Eved of a Kohen is someone who is entitled to eat Truma, he does not get a portion. He doesn't get a, he's not part of the formal distribution of Truma. So he doesn't get, he can't appear at the distribution site and claim a portion on behalf of his master, unless LMK Rabu Imo, unless his master is with him. Dilmo Osila Suki Lyuksin the Savri Kohenu, because otherwise if the master is not there, if he comes on his own, people will think that he's a real Kohen, and they're going to consider him genealogical purity as a Kohen, and we don't want that mistake to arise. So being that each one of these is a Suffolk Kohen, is a Suffolk, I should say, a Suffolk slave, he cannot get Truma on his own. And hence the Gemara said, Chela Ke'echad. Now, Tanan Keman Domar, so our Mishnah then is teaching in accordance with the opinion that says, Ein Cholkin Truma Li'eved Ela Im Kain Rabo Imo. Truma is not given to the slave of a Kohen unless the master is with him. The Sanya, and this point is actually a Machlokes Tanoim. Our Mishnah then representing one of those two opinions. On the side of the Gemara, you can see under the Nosei heading, we've written Chalukas Truma Li'evet Shel Kohen, the distribution of Truma to the slave of a Kohen, Bagorin at the granary. Machlokes Tanoim Im Noisin Lo Beli Shiehe Rabo Imo. Do we give to him without his master present? So the source we read is the Sanya Ein Cholkin Truma Le'Eved Elim Kain Rabo Imo Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. The master must be with him. A slave cannot come on his own to get a portion on behalf of his master. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Yochol Shiomar, the slave of a Kohen can say, Im Kohen Ani, if I am, and we should say, certainly in this description will be very relevant to our case where there was a mix-up. The fellow can say, Im Kohen Ani Tanu Li B'Shvil Asmi, if I'm the, am I a real Kohen, then give me because I have it, I deserve it in my own merit. V'im Eved Kohen Ani, and if I happen to be the slave of a Kohen, Tanu Li B'Shvil Rabbi, give me a portion on behalf of my master. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is no legal acceptance of a slave showing up at a distribution, at a Truma distribution point. According to Rabbi Yossi, a slave can show up. With this information, we proceed. B'mkomo shel Rabbi Yehuda, in Rabbi Yehuda's locale, hoyu malin mitruma liyuchsin. Malin literally is to raise up, but it means that we would come to halachic conclusions, legal conclusions concerning someone's family status. Yichus, yuchasin, has to do with family background, family descent. So in the community of Rav Yehuda, they would come to conclusions based on the receipt of Truma and conclude, if he is receiving a portion of Truma, he is a definite Kohen. How could they come to such a conclusion? Because in Rabbi Yehuda's realm, Truma would not be given to someone who is a non-Kohen, would not be given to an Eved, to a slave. B'mekomosh Rabbi Yossi, lo hoyumalin mitruma liyuchsin, in the town of Rabbi Yossi, where Truma is being distributed, and you see someone receiving it, you couldn't come to any conclusions regarding the purity of that individual, the priestly status of the individual, because it could be a slave that's receiving it. Tanya, Omar Rebbe Elazar Reb Tzadik. Rebbe Elazar tells us, Miyomai lo he'adati elo edus echad. There's a section that we have in brackets, and we skip that because the Gemara will take to task that which is in the text that's in the brackets. So he says, I never testified except for on one occasion, and bichulalo zeved likun alpi, and as a result of that one time that I testified, there was thought to classify an Eved as a Kohen. Now, what happened there? Chaza be'asrei Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Tzadok had seen someone receiving Truma, and he saw that in Rabbi Yossi's locale. V'yazal v'yasid be'asrei Rabbi Yuda, and Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Tzadok said, he testified about this individual who received Truma. He shared that information in Rabbi Yuda's locale. Now, in Rabbi Yuda's locale, they take Truma receipt very seriously. They take that as an indication that the receiver was a Kohen. So, but the problem in this story is quite obvious. The root of the problem is that the initial sighting, the initial witnessing of the receipt of the Truma was in Rabbi Yossi's locale, where even Avodim were given Truma. Now, we skipped a section. So let's go back over the source where Rabbi Lozer Tzadok says, "Miyom Elo Ha'adati Elo Eidus Achas." In all my days, I didn't testify except for one occasion, and in the brackets, "Veheilu Eved Lakuno Alpi." And as a result of my testimony, a Kohen, an Eved was declared a Kohen. In other words, mistakenly. So the Gemara asks with a tone of wonderment, "He'elu salka daitach? Do you think that actually took place?" The next section, you can see we have an internal brackets, an angular brackets. According to Tosfos, this shouldn't be here, and the Bach makes reference to that. But we're going to read it. Rashi seems to comment on it, so it's. As far as Rashi, it seems it's part of the text. What's the wonderment based on? The wonderment is based on the idea that when it comes to the righteous, and in this case Rabbi Lozer Rabbi Tzadok is a righteous individual, when it comes to the righteous, we know that the Almighty prevents mistakes even through the animals of the righteous. So if the animals of the righteous are protected from wrongdoing, all the more so the righteous themselves, the people, the righteous people will be protected from any stumbling. So that the Gemara is wondering, how could it possibly be that as a result of Rabbi Lozer ben Tzadok, some guys was falsely ascribed to kahuna status. So let's see. Here is the wonderment. Hashto be'emton shel tzadikim ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevi takola al yodon. Mind you, the animals of the righteous, the Almighty protects them from takola, from stumbling. Al yodon tzadikim atzmon lo kol shekein. As far as the Almighty's protection of the righteous themselves, all the more so. Elo Amo, but rather the more accurate version of the story is Bikshulalo Sefid Lakun Alpi. There was thought. It didn't come to be, but there was thought to ascribe kahuna status to an Aved. What happened? Chozo Biasri Rabbi Yossi. He saw this guy receiving Truma in Rabbi Yossi's town. He also asked Rabbi Yehuda, and he went to Rabbi Yehuda's town and told the story about so-and-so receiving Truma. So naturally, in Rabbi Yehuda's town, they said, if you receive Truma, you must be a real Kohen. Tonu Rabbonan. Before we continue with the Gemara text, we glance at the side. Under the Nosei, the topic heading, we read, Rishima shel Elu she'en cholkelim Truma beveis Avronas v'loma. We're going to see a list of people who are not to receive a Truma portion at the formal Truma distribution site. And the list is featured in this Tanaic source, and afterwards the Gemara will deal with the reasons behind it. Truma, one should realize, it's a tithe from one's produce, and it also has an element of sanctity to it. That's important to say at the outset. There's an element of sanctity. It's not simply a mundane food that we would call chulin, but in many places you can see the term kochim associated with truma. So that, by way of introduction, should hold us in good stead. Tanu Rabbanan, Asora ein chokim lehem truma beis agronis. There are 10 that are not to receive truma at the truma distribution site. Now, don't make any mistake about this. We're not saying that they don't eat from truma, but we're saying they are not to be the formal receivers of truma at the distribution site. And who are they? Eluhin, Cheresh, the deaf mute, Shoit, an imbecile, Kotan, a minor, Tumtum, an individual whose gender organs are not visible, Vandrogin is someone who has dual gender organs, Voeved, the slave, Voisha, the woman, Voorel, the uncircumcised, Vatome, someone who is defiled, Venose Isha She'ena Hoygenes Lo, or a Kohen that happened to marry a woman that he shouldn't have married, someone who's a woman who has been disqualified from the Kuna. I guess he couldn't overcome his infatuation with a particular woman. Turns out she's a divorcee, but he insisted on marrying her anyway. He is called a man that married a woman that's Eino Hoygenes Lo. The Chulon Mishagrin Lahem Lebotayim. We have this list of people. With regard to most of them, we will, Mishagr means we'll send Truma to their homes and they can eat it. Amongst them is an Orel. Now, an Orel, he is not allowed to eat Truma, but he can give it to his wife or his slaves. So, most of the people in this can receive, will have Truma sent to them in their homes. Chutz mitomei the noise isha shena hagenes lo, with the exception of numbers 9 and 10 in the list, which will be explained later why that is. Bishlamosh chere sheita v'koton lav b'nei deyoninu. I understand that we don't distribute Truma portions to these people, the cheresh, the deaf mute, the shaita, the imbecile, the cotton, the minor. They are not people of, we'll say, of fully sound mind. They're not b'nei dea. Dea means thought and mindfulness, awareness. And Rashi adds at the bottom line, v'ziluso de truma l'chalik len begurin li'ain kol. It's considered disparaging to the truma. That's why we mentioned earlier, the truma should be viewed through the eyes of holiness. It's disparaging to truma to have them receive a portion of truma in full public view, which would be the case at the granary. Tumtum vandroginus, regarding those two people that are, say, gender affected. So nami, they too, bria b'fnei, we're at the top of the kufam and aleph, bria b'fnei atzma ninu. Rashi says at the top, bria b'fnei atzma ninu, they're considered unique creatures. V'havya zilusa de kochim, and it's considered an insult, a disparagement to kochim, to give people like that. Of course it's no fault of their own, etc. But when you're dealing with matters of sanctity, of holiness, there is a certain, we'll say, high level of propriety and honor that must be bestowed unto the matter at hand, matter concerned of kochim, in this case the truma. So because of their defect, they are considered, it's considered a disparagement for truma, for them to be standing there in full public view receiving truma. Eved nami dilma osi lasuki mi truma liyosin. And eved also is not to receive a portion at the distribution site, at the goren, because people might mistakenly come to conclude that he is a formal kohen, he's a real pure kohen. That's lasuki, means to raise up mi truma, from the receipt of truma to yuchasin, to a genealogical family descent status. Orel v'tome mishum de me'isi. These individuals are called molos. Molos in English
is something that we translate often as disgusting. It's disparaging for an orel to have. It's disparaging to the truma for an orel or a tame to receive it at the distribution site. Noisei shoshena hageneslo, the kohen who married a woman unfit to him, also mishum knosa. That's a fine that we impose on him. So we've accounted for most of the people in the list. Elo isha, my time alone. Why a woman? Why is it that a woman cannot appear at the granary to receive a portion of truma? Pligi ba Rav Popov, Rav Huna, Rav Yeshua. We have two opinions. Chad omar mishum grusha, the chad omar mishum yichud. One says because of grusha. Grusha is a reference to a divorcee, a woman who was married to a kohen, so she's entitled to receive truma. However, if she's divorced, she's no longer entitled to eat truma. Assuming, of course, that she's not a daughter of a kohen, she loses the truma. She was eating in the merit of her husband, the kohen. But if she's divorced, she's no longer she's no longer married to a kohen. Now, the problem, if women were to receive truma, any particular woman might be divorced from her kohen husband, and at that point she's not fit to receive truma, and people don't necessarily know that, and she will receive something that is not due to her. So we don't want women showing up at the truma distribution site. The other opinion, chadamar mishum yichud, the problem of a woman being in private, in seclusion with another man, that could be a problem, and hence we don't want women going to the granary to receive truma, to subject themselves to a problem of being secluded with another man. My binayu, what will be the point of difference between these two explanations? Iko binayu, an example where you'll see a point of difference between these, a practical point of difference, is Iko binayu, there is a difference between them. Bei dori de mikrav lemasa velo shchichi bu inchi. A bei dori is a granary that's close to town, but it's not frequented by people. So if it's close to town, so the issue of people not knowing her marital status is unlikely. They will know if she has been divorced. So if your whole concern is because of people not knowing if she was, in this case a woman could show up. However, it's described also as a place that the public doesn't frequent. So if your main concern is the concern of yichud, if that's what you're concerned about, so a woman would not be allowed to show up at a bei dori that's mikrav lemasa but lo shchichi bu inchi. Inami, another point of difference would be demerachak ushchichi bu inchi, a granary that's at a distance from town, but it's frequented by the masses. Lots of people are there all the time. So if your main concern was your main hesitation to giving to women was because of the lack of knowing her marital status, that will be a problem over here because it's far from town. People out there don't know what her status is. However, as far as a yichud problem, that's not so over here. V'kulon mishagun lehem lebateim chutz mitomei v'noise isha shenei hageneslo. This is a quote from what we saw on Tzadi Tesom Ebeis. You can use the star that you see to the side and see where the quote is coming from. We saw in the source that all the people that don't show up are not to show up at the granary do or are nevertheless entitled to have it sent to their homes, except chutz mitomei, except for the defiled. There's a fine upon him for not having been careful not to become defiled, and likewise someone who married a woman that is not fit for him. Avol orel mishagrinon lei, the uncircumcised, though true he doesn't show up at the granary, but he is entitled to have a portion of truma sent to his home. He's a Kohen that's uncircumcised. My taima. Why is he entitled to that? Mishum d'onis. Because his lack of circumcision is a function of something beyond his control. He's a fellow that had two brothers of his that previously circumcised and died. The Gemara asks, Tomei nami ha'onis, a person who became defiled. He may very well have become defiled through circumstances that were beyond his control. In other words, he wasn't looking for it. He wasn't looking to become defiled. The Gemara says, "Hai nofish oinsei, v'hai lo nofish onsei." In the case of the oriole, nofish means a lot. Onsei, his onus, the circumstances that were beyond his control were very much beyond his control. Two of his brothers died. That sets a precedent for a life-threatening situation. What in the world could he possibly have done about that? It's totally beyond his control. That's nafish onse, totally beyond his control. Therefore, there's no reason for us to impose any restriction upon him. However, someone who became tomei, lo nafish onse, it wasn't so beyond his control. A person might have been able to exercise a little more precaution and avoid the tumah, and therefore he is not entitled to have the trumas even sent to his home. Tonu Rabbanon, ho'eved vo'isha ein cholkin lem truma beis agronis. A slave and a woman are not to receive a portion of truma at the granary. Uvemokam shecholkin noisim lishatchila ufotrin osa miad. And where they do distribute, the woman is to receive first, and then set free. In other words, she got her portion. Now you can go home, and that we do that immediately. This source doesn't make any sense, though. My ko'omar, what is this source saying? You start off by saying that women, slaves, and women don't get truma at the Beis Hagronos. So they don't get it, the Beis Hagronos. So how can it go on saying, and where they do get? Hochi ko'omar. The source is to be understood as follows. Rashi adds that the phrase in the source of Vamokam Shecholkin, that phrase is not a reference to truma at all. It's a reference to something else. And Hochi ko'omar, thusly it is saying, Maiser oni, Hamischalek b'soch habayis, Maiser oni, that's a tithe of 10% of one's produce separated on the third and sixth year of the 7-year sabbatical cycle and given to the poor. A woman who is poor is entitled to this tithe, the Maiser oni. So this is another, we'll say, woman eligible tithe. Maiser oni, which is divided not at a granary, it's mischalik besof beso. So, the source said uvamokum shecholkin, it's a reference to the distribution of maiser oni that is distributed to women because it's distributed from people's homes. So when a woman shows up for a maiser oni tithe receipt, noisnin leishat chila, if there are other people there, several men and a woman, even though she may have come in a little later, she goes to the front of the line. We give to her first. My taimo, mishum zilusa. Why is that? Because of the disparagement involved. And look at the extreme sensitivity of the Chazal, something that I dare say, if I'm entitled to just an editorial comment, you find in certain sections, certain groups of people have a massive misunderstanding of the Torah and its attitude toward women, as is often presented in popular terms, to quite to the contrary of certain public images. The Torah is extremely concerned about the dignity afforded to women, and it's considered undignified. It's considered disparaging to a woman to have her standing around waiting in line, certainly amongst a group of other men. So in order to preserve her dignity, she goes to the front of the line. That's what we're saying because of the zilusa, the otherwise the cheapening of her, the disparagement that she would experience, because of that she gets first. Omar Rava. Meresha, at first, kihavu asu gavra ve'itzu l'dino kamoi. When a woman, when a gavra is a man and a woman, each one, there's a man and a woman, but each one having their own legal cases. A man and his, the litigant opposite him, and a woman with her litigant opposite her, when they would come to me for judgment. Rava was a dayan, was a judge. Have a sharino tigra de gavra beresha. I would first turn my attention to solve the man's case. Amino, I was figuring the mechayev b'mitzvahs. A man has more mitzvahs in practical terms to fulfill than a woman. And I might add the primary mitzvah that is duty bound upon a man and not upon a woman is the study of Torah. So because of the man, the urgency of the man to finish the case and get back to his mitzvah performance, Rava says, I would therefore deal with the man's case first. Kevin deShemana Loha. However, when I heard this brisa that speaks about the distribution of the Maaser Oni, we give to the woman first because it's important for us to preserve her dignity. Oh, Sharino Tigra de Itza Bereisha. I would then solve the case that the woman was bringing to the court first. I would deal with her case first. My time off. Why is that? Mishum zilusa, because of what would otherwise be a disparaging of the woman, for her to have to sit around and wait for the other case to be dealt with before hers. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Mark the Morris, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.